Thanks, Brett.
All right, we're going to do a 2-minute meditation, and then we'll get started. Serenity prayer.
God, bring me serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and listen to know the difference.
All right, the home stretch.
Only 7 more sessions. All right.
So I'm reading again from this book called The Spirituality of Imperfection. Honesty gets us clean and sober, but tolerance keeps us clean and sober. When alcoholics and addicts stand up at meetings and tell their stories, the experience of tolerance is almost palpable. Stories invite tolerance because they sensitize both the hearers and the tellers to the richness and complexity of our diverse possibilities. Each human being has his or her own story. And every story is unique. But the telling and hearing of the unique stories takes place in a setting where each participant is conscious of an identity rooted in limitation. This foundation of shared weakness invites an attitude that allows differences to be seen as strengths, and therefore is enriching rather than threatening. Stories founded in an identity defined by limitation and shared with others who acknowledge the same limitation involves less the discussion of weaknesses than the acceptance that one has much to learn from others. Such storytelling testifies that one is teachable. For in the setting of AA and CA and DAA and all these 12-step fellowships, storytelling and story listening, two paradoxical things happen. First, participants discover their shared story. And second, they come to realize that each of their stories is unique. But the discovery of shared story must precede the realization of uniqueness and difference. For only the foundation of shared weakness, shared limitation, and shared flawedness can sustain the openness to difference, the attitude of being teachable, and the vision that underpins tolerance. And so, as I was reading that before the session, it was reminding me of why my experience with who was carrying the message to me almost 15 years ago was so impactful. There's two things were happening. One, I had received the gift of surrender, and I had become more open-minded and more willing than I'd ever become in my life. So there was an initiative within myself to do something. But then the opportunity would not have come unless a man was there when I asked for help. And I do believe that it's an important part of the entire spiritual experience for the person who needs help to ask for help. Sometimes I get phone calls about, individuals that are struggling and people want me to talk to them. And I'll ask them, I was like, has this individual asked that I talk to them? And they're like, no. I was like, well, then I'm not coming. Right? There has to be an invitation there, because that is a sign of humility. It's a sign of surrender. It's a sign that I give up. There's so much that goes into that experience of asking for help, and that was the major difference. I don't think there had been 1, 2, 3 guys tried to sponsor me between 2004 and 2007, and all three of them approached me. They approached me. When I walked up to Randy and when he was standing outside that meeting on a Friday night, I said, I don't want to die. Just tell me what to do. Show me how to live. And so my recovery not only began inside of me with a first step, with a surrender, but it began in someone else's heart. We always hear this thing, and I probably say this every time I've ever been to the Bridges. That you hear all the time that the newcomer is the most important person there is in the fellowship. I don't believe that to be totally true. I believe that the newcomers are the lifeblood. So you individuals that are here going out to outside meetings are the lifeblood of our program. Lifeblood of our program. But as far as this area is concerned, this group of young men over here who have come and spent their time here this weekend, they're the heart that blood pumps through. Yeah. So the heart is those actively out here trying to carry the message. And I have always been a big book enthusiast. But there were many years where I believed that my working the steps was how I grew spiritually. Or my working of the steps was the work. I'm in the work. That was a big thing in our little family. You're in the work. And then I heard this man who at one point was my great-great-grand sponsor. He passed away in 2006. His name was Don Pritz. And one of my favorite people to listen to. But he said, God bless those big book enthusiasts. They actually think when they're doing the step work, they're in the work. But here, clearly, in Bill's story, Bill says, if Tarek and Brandon fail to perfect and enlarge their spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, Tarek and Brandon will not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And right there it says, perfect and enlarge our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. That's how we grow spiritually. So I grow more spiritually in the process of watching someone I'm taking through the steps grow spiritually. I get caught up in that experience. And for me, it's evidence and it's confirmation of the power of God, the transformative and regenerative power of God. And I've been very fortunate and blessed since I've been here that I know many men who I saw on day one and are still in my life today, and it's a very long time since day one. And they're not anywhere remotely do they resemble what they were. And this man here is a perfect example. Now, I didn't see him on day one. I think I met him for the first time around day 90. Mm-hmm. But he's not the man I met day 90. Hell, he's not the man I met 6 years ago or was in my life 6 years ago, because there's a line in the doctor's opinion that sometimes I think is very well hidden. It says, if our ideals are grounded in a power greater than ourselves, then we can recreate our lives. And I think we can both say, because we've been doing this work for a long time, that like aspects of our lives have been recreated several times. And it's all part of being active. But my activity, like my first year and a half clean and sober, all I cared about was sponsoring people. Right? I cared about sponsoring people, and there was a lot of ego in it. And but when I was not at a meeting or sponsoring a guy working steps, I was miserable. I didn't like being by myself. I had moved back into my parents' house when I had about 9 or 10 months sober because I had a bunch of money I owed. I needed to make financial amends, and me and my sponsor talked about it. And it was a good idea for me to move back into my parents' house because that way I could make a financial amends. And then I stopped making amends shortly thereafter. And I was at a meeting, and this guy hands out these CDs, and he hands out a CD by this guy named Mark Houston, God rest his soul, and another gentleman named Chris R. from Ingram, Texas. And at the time, I just looked at the CDs, walked to my car, put them in the side door, went on my business for another 9 months. At about, I'd say about 18 months, a year and a half sober, I'm miserable when I'm by myself. I got a bunch of guys I'm sponsoring. My sex life's upside down, and I'm having trouble in personal relationships. I'm full of fear. I don't know what I'm going to do to make a living, and I am real tight. You know, the spring in my chest is tightening, and then one night I'm driving home from a meeting, and I get this, like, the voice says, listen to the CD. I put the CD in. And Mark comes on there, and he's talking about meditation and steps 10 and 11 in a way I've never heard before. And I was like, oh, I definitely missed something here. And then Chris R. gets on the CD, and he starts talking about this concept of the spiritual malady and how it can come back after you've been sober for some time. And then right after I hear 10 and 11, I hear the spiritual malady that explains what I'm experiencing in that moment. And then I seek some individuals in Atlanta who know these two guys, and I get plugged in, and I go back through the steps. And as a result, I became a much more effective sponsor as a result of all that. I had been taking people through the book line by line and very Joe and Charlie-esque, but I wasn't doing a lot of investigation in step 11. I wasn't practicing a 10th step all day long. I was doing nothing with meditation. And so Brandon and I were talking a while back, and I think he'd gone through like a drought or something about guys weren't asking him to sponsor. And he had this intuitive thought that he was going to address his own spiritual condition and get back into more disciplined work around 10 and 11. And then all of a sudden, these people started asking him to work with them. That's how the story went down. And so if you're paying attention to everything, if you're the action with the amends process, that you're carrying the message, that you're practicing a 10-11 step, and you're going to meetings and you're sharing your experience from your heart and from your actual experience, not knowledge, they will come. If you build the recovery, they will come, and they will ask for help. You know, but a lot of guys I sponsor, and they will get really stressed out if they don't have anybody they're working with. I just recently watched a man who was sponsoring four guys through the steps, had an H&I commitment at a treatment center. He drank after 14 years. One of my closest friends drank after 14 years. So based on a conversation, I see how resentment's the number one offender and destroys more alcoholics and addicts than anything else. But I also saw that there was a lot of stuff being missed in steps 10 and 11. And so doing the complete body of work sets us up to be very effective sponsors. But the key to all of this is not per se sponsorship. It is feeling useful. Because the worst place for an addict and an alcoholic to get to is a place where they feel useless. And so there are a lot of things we can do in our fellowship when it comes to carrying the message. Now, in the big book, the chapter Working with Others, that's about working with others. It's 2 12-step calls, and they have a bunch of great questions for you and a sponsee to look at. But the key to all of this is feeling useful, because you can carry the message and not have to be actively working with somebody. Don't take this as Tarek saying you're not supposed to sponsor. Right? Because clearly this guy was sponsoring people, and he was not conscious of the presence of God in his life, so therefore he didn't have a position of neutrality. Therefore he picked up a drink because he had no choice other than to drink when the monkey was on his back. And so what I want you guys to walk away from this weekend is the idea of a complete game. A complete game. You know, don't hang your hat on just one step. You know, I got to get to working with others because that's what's going to, we don't know. Every individual's experience is different. Sponsorship has been a very, very important thing in my life. And I love it and I do it. There are some people in this program that I respect and they sponsor, but they do other things to feel useful that are just as effective. And they're very disciplined with the rest of the step work. So I do want you to go out there and sponsor people and carry the message. But man, get involved in your home group. There's service structure there that can make you feel useful while you're going to meetings and raising your hand and sharing your experience and going to the detoxes. You know, I know one guy in particular who just goes to detox meetings and he carries the message and he rarely ever has any sponsees, but he's always carrying the message to the detox. So this is about a complete body of work. All of it creates a transformation where my relationship with my higher power is the most important thing. And as a result of that relationship, I love to sacrifice my personal time to help people in your situation. This is a sacrifice, man. I got a family at home. Brandon has a family at home. There is a part of me that never wants to come here. We did this in St. Simon's Island not too long ago. And we did one like 6 or 7 months ago. And I have to give up my family and the weekend. And there is always, I would be lying to you if I said there wasn't a part of me that doesn't want to. But I have a responsibility. All right. Because a long time ago, I discovered that the statement that we say around the rooms that we only keep what we have by giving it away is not true. You will never get it unless you give it away. And I gave it away a long time ago, and I get it. I will always do this. My ticket has been punched. This is the contribution I need to make while I'm here. This is the only version of this model that's ever been in existence. Each one of you is the only version of that model sitting in that chair, and you have a contribution to make that no one else can make. And if you don't make your contribution, it will never get made. And for some of us sitting in this room, the contribution is working with others. And as a result of understanding a debt that I have to repay God, this is what I do. This is what I do. It's part of my repayment plan for this beautiful gift I got, which was surrender and willingness that has not dissipated much over the almost 15 years that I've been here. I'm going to leave you guys with this. We're all going to transition at some point to whatever is next. We all got an expiration day. And we all are going to have a tombstone if we decide to get buried. And my tombstone is going to say October 12th, 1976, - November 5th, 2007, - whenever my expiration date takes place. The question I have that I'm going to leave you with is, what are you doing with your dash? What are you doing with your dash? You guys have been an attentive audience. I greatly appreciate the invitation to come back here year after year on Founders Day weekend. I love that there are people from the recovery community that come and join us over this weekend. And I want to thank the staff for having us. Thank you very much.
An alcoholic, my name's Brandon. So Dr. Bob's nightmare, it starts off by saying a co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, the birth of our society dates from his first day of permanent sobriety, June 10th, 1935, yesterday, 87 years ago. To 1950, the year of his death, he carried the AA message to more than 5,000 alcoholic men and women. And to all these, he gave his medical services without thought or charge. 5,000 alcoholics between 1935 and 1950. Because I like to do things. Sometimes I do math. Figure that that's 175 months that Dr. Bob was sober. 5,000 alcoholics divided by 175 months means that he was sponsoring 28.57 people a month of his entire sobriety. He was taking somebody through the work every day of every month and taking a day to 2 days off. What are you doing? He finishes his story with, "I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want it and need it badly. I do this for four reasons. A sense of duty. It is a pleasure. Because in doing so, I am paying a debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. Because every time I do it, I take out a little insurance for myself against a possible slip." I'm going to skip down a paragraph. He says, "If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think that you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking and using for good and all," which kind of sounds like forever, "and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink or drug." Just one half. We don't even need all of you, just part of you. I think that this story could be these stories I'm getting ready to tell you could be misconstrued into telling you that I'm something special. I think through this process of the step work and through the experience of my life, I realize that I am incredibly special. And that the world as it is today, could not exist without me. But if I were gone, the world would exist just fine. You see, we've got this paradox where we have this existence which needs us but doesn't need us at all. And so, Tarek and I used to be members at a home group, the same home group, and then that home group started doing some stuff that we didn't necessarily agree with, and we kind of both slowly kind of moved away from it. And for a period of time, I didn't really have a home group that I really called home. I had one that I was at, but I was on the road a lot, so I wasn't there very much. And then around the same time period, that's when COVID hit and everything started shutting down. And I tried a couple meetings online, and I didn't really much care for them, so I kind of floated away for a little while, and then after things started opening back up, I started attending a Sunday night meeting in a clubhouse, which had kind of clubhouse-like sobriety, you know. There were some people in there that was solid, had a good message, and then there was kind of the rest of the people that were just kind of there, you know, sucking the life out of the room, right? At least that was my experience with it. But the first night I went back to that meeting, I didn't know exactly what time the meeting started, so I showed up around 6. And the door was locked, and the meeting wasn't until 7, so I was just hanging out in the parking lot, messing around on my phone, and this guy pulls in the parking lot, and like there was just something about him. There's something about like his experience that looked like he needed something. Looked like he needed a little bit of a shift or a change in existence. And I observed it. His spirit spoke to my spirit. I saw it, paid attention to it, but cataloged it for later. Then I go to this meeting that starts at Sunday or at 7 o'clock, and I'm sitting in there, and somewhere in the meeting, this guy shares that, you know, he tried AA 14 years ago and he didn't really do anything, but he was struggling and he needed to come back. And like, this is my first meeting at this clubhouse, and so there's a bunch of guys that are gathered around him, and they're telling him all these things that he should be doing. But what I observe is that nobody's actually taken charge of this guy and given him a solution. I'm listening. And, you know, I realize just because of the size I am, I have a little bit of a presence, so I kind of weasel my way into the circle. And then I start asking him a couple questions about what's going on. He starts talking about how he's struggling with this thing with his wife, and I was like, oh, I got some of that. So I share some of that. And before you know it, as I'm talking to this guy, what happens is everybody else just disappears. It's just he and I. Nobody was willing to sponsor the guy. Nobody was really there to offer him any real help. They just wanted to tell him some stuff like, I don't know what they were telling him. It didn't sound like any good advice. But so I talked to the guy, and I said, okay, look, I'm your sponsor. You're going to meet me here Sunday night before this meeting, and we're going to start doing the steps. And so he's a firefighter, so we kind of had, you know, on and off weeks, and we'd meet sometimes on Tuesdays. And so he and I started going through the steps, and then this guy leaves the bridges, and he and I start meeting at the same clubhouse, I think, same night. And then we decide we're going to go check out this meditation meeting. And we join this, we infiltrate this this meeting, right? And me and the guy that's having the spiritual experience that was here at the Bridges of Hope, we start sharing in this meeting. And what becomes kind of evident is that, like me and this guy that just left the bridges, that's just reworking the steps, we're the powerhouses in this group, right? And so what ends up happening is the people that were, like, I guess the home group members of that meeting, they just disappear. And one night it's me and this dude, and we're like, there's no discussion leader, there's no chairperson. So I grab the binder and say, Stephen, sit here. We're doing this, right? And we do it. And then we call group conscience. Nobody shows up. So we take over this meeting, right? And then I'm chair 1 month. He's chair the next month. And the other guy's the chair the next month. And we're bringing in discussion leaders. And what's happening is before you know it, this meeting's got some power in it. We're bringing the heat, right? And like now, like we tweak the format because, you know, we're running the thing, so we can do whatever we want with it, right? And we create the fellowship that we crave, right? So I was without a home group, and I created one with some sponsees, and we had this wonderful experience, and we still go, and it's what, 3 years now that we've been. 2 years that we've been going to that meeting, and now other guys from the bridges are starting to join us, and we got this thing going on, right? Well, around that same time, I decided I also wanted to go check out this Monday night CA meeting, so I infiltrate that one too. But what happens is with that one, they've got an established group of elders. So what I do is I share and I participate and I'm part of the group. I show up at group conscience, and when they're having a discussion about things where they're maybe not considering the ramifications of the tradition, I start contributing, hey, the traditions actually say this, and this is actually how we should be looking at this, and have you considered this? And one of the guys that's part of that home group, he starts observing, like, who is this guy? He sounds like he actually knows something and has something going on. So year ends, it's time to get a new group conscience chair, and he tells me, I'm going to put you up for it. Okay, guys, this was the most chaotic group conscience meeting, like prior. It was like they would last like an hour, and there would be nonsense going on, crosstalk and everything. And so they elect me group conscience chair, and then all of a sudden, we're streamlined, we're efficient, we have an agenda, we know what we're doing, we're going through, and then all of a sudden people are like, who is this guy, right? And then the group's shifting and changing, and then, you know, I infiltrate the speaker selection committee, and I'm going to bring in my speakers and all this stuff, but we don't have to, like, overthrow everything. We can just become members and become part of it, and we can create this thing. Now, this other cool thing happened. There's this group over here in Augusta, and I've infiltrated it a little bit too, but in a different way. So there's a guy that came through here that asked me to take him through the steps. And so I take this guy through the steps, and he starts having an experience, a new experience with the steps. And this buddy of his starts saying, man, there's something going on with him. And so he calls me and says, hey, will you take me through the steps? And so I start taking him through the steps. And then there's this other guy that notices that the second guy is a new guy. He starts being positive and having a different experience. So that guy calls me and he goes, look, I don't know what you're doing with him, but you think I could start calling you? I'm like, sure. And he calls me every day. He's been doing it for months. And he's been having an experience. And what he didn't know was that he was getting ready to go through all these relationship and job problems and everything. I was right on time. A relationship cultivated right on time. And then you fast forward a couple more months. And then there's this other guy that calls me and he goes, okay, so like, I'm calling you because I'm angry at you. And I'm like, okay, well, why are you angry at me? And he goes, because I lost my gossip buddy. He goes, this guy used to gossip with me all the time, but ever since he started calling you, he doesn't gossip anymore. He's like, so I was wondering, can I start calling you? I'm like, sure. So he starts calling, and he starts having an experience. Okay? Now, I'm not telling you any of this stuff to tell you that, like, I'm anything special. I'm just me. I'm serious about recovery. I have a lot of fun in recovery. I have a lot of fun with working the steps and exploring the spiritual path. And what's happened is the fellowship that I crave has grown up about me. You want to change the world? Get sober. You will change everything and everybody in it by just seeking a spiritual path. The ripple effect of our lives happens in such a negative way for most of our life, and then we come here, we get these tools, and the ripple effect of the positive in our life happens. We get fun texts like this from somebody. Hey, Brandon, hope you're doing well. This is so and so. Just got Mike to agree to go to two meetings in the next week. He has not been to any since he first went to the couple in the beginning. He wants to go to ones here around Woodstock. Do you know of any really good meetings in the Roswell or East Cobb area? I send her the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting schedule. And then I say, if he isn't serious about going to meetings, any meeting will work. If he wants to get serious about going to meetings, he can call me. The meetings don't treat alcoholism, only the steps do that. She says, he isn't drinking, doing great on that part, just needs people he can talk to about the emotional part he's going through. People who have been where he is and that truly understand him. My response, okay, if he went to some meetings with me, I could introduce him to that kind of person. Otherwise, any meeting will do. He may find somebody with luck. Guys, The network that comes out of the bridges is connected to people all over the place. Get connected with those people. The people that leave here do find people that are serious about recovery, if they're serious about recovery. If you guys want to do this, all you have to do is try. And your life will transform, and things will be cool. And you'll go on, and years from now, you'll be the guy sitting in the back to come back and sit through a weekend like this for some reason that you can't comprehend right now. Still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well-understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we no longer need be square pegs and round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp or circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly substitute. True ambition is not what we thought. True ambition is the desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Guys, this was a different weekend for us. You are a different group than we've experienced ever before. The energy of the group is different. But I'll tell you, I don't know that I've felt a group as a whole be as attentive as this group has been. You guys, there's something, like there's a lot of success in this room, and I can see it. I can feel it, and I know it. You're quieter. You maybe don't ask as many questions, but you sure do seem to be engaged at a level that we've not seen in a while. So you guys keep up the good work. If you're going to be here next year, we'd rather see you in the back or on the sides, not here in the middle. But you're welcome anytime. It's usually around this weekend you reach out to Roscoe, we'll be here. We've done it the last 7. I don't know that we'll quit anytime soon.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, sir.
Where do you draw the line for your family, for your personal life, for finances, to be able to put a roof over the house and feed the kids, and when you're taking all these calls and you have all these meetings? Where do you draw the line?
Where do we draw the line with the meetings and that?
Well, I have I attend a Sunday night meeting, and I attend a Monday night meeting. I meet with sponsees before the Sunday night meeting and after the Sunday night meeting. And I meet with sponsees before the Monday night meeting. Those are my time slots. Those 2 days are devoted to recovery. My wife knows that. My family knows that. The rest of the time I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, there's so many people that come into recovery and they've been absent or out there running for so long, distant from the family, apart from the family. And then they come into the recovery community and they attend a meeting or multiple meetings every single day. And the harm that they've been dumping on the family of being missing continues forever. You work these steps. You have an experience with this power of God. You get hooked up with a serious group of people. You become a member of a home group. You don't have to go to a meeting every day. It is not required. Anybody that tells you that you have to go to a meeting every day is probably not in a recovered state. And it's I mean, Tarek goes to one in-person meeting a week and then he does a bunch of Zoom stuff. Guys, like, you can have a connection to this power and not be a slave to recovery. You can interact with it, have fun with it. Aside from fifth step weekends where I have to listen to a fifth step, that's a different category, and I put it on the calendar and my wife knows about it. Like, aside from that, like my routine is understood by pretty much everybody in my network.
my family, everybody.
You'll tell them that, like, when you get...
Yeah, when I know a fifth step's coming up, hey, hon, there's a fifth step coming up.
Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, we work through that, but I mean, it's not. I run my life a lot like a business. My sponsees, they have to show up for work. If they don't show up, they get fired.
I'll say this: the guys that don't do what they're supposed to do think I'm an ass.
The guys that do their homework and do the assignments generally love me because they have an experience. And so expectations are real clear in my life. This is what I got. This is the time I got. If you don't meet it, we're going to find a different way to do it, and it's probably not going to involve me and you.
I was fortunate that I was not in a relationship. I was not relationship material when I showed up here. And therefore, I did 180 meetings in 90 days. Okay. I caught fire with the big book, and I love going to meetings. And until I met my ex-wife, I was in probably 5 meetings a week because I loved carrying the message. I probably love to hear myself talk at that point as well. And I was very active. I participated. I had a service position. But then my ex-wife came into the picture, and I had to recalibrate everything. And so that's when I decided, okay, I'm only going to sponsor 3 guys, and I'm only going to go to the meetings on these 2 nights. All right? And that worked for a while, but it was still challenging. And I'm hard-pressed to think of one person I know who's been in a relationship with someone not in the program other than Brandon. And even Brandon over the years, I think, has had a little bit of the tension that's involved when one person's not in the program and one person is. Nothing wrong. I mean, one's not better than the other. They both have their challenges if you're asking yourself, which one am I going to date? But I am convinced that when you first start, you have to participate at a very high level. He participated at a very high level in the beginning. That's how the foundation is set. But people think it's got to go on indefinitely. That's not. It only has to go on for a few short months. While we set the foundation, you become a participant in your home group. You get taken through the steps. And I've had a few opportunities to sit down with families, and I tell them it's going to feel like he's neglecting you. But he needs to be away from you for a short period of time in order to set the foundation. And then your life is never going to be the way it was before. He's going to have to participate. Otherwise, he's not going to stay clean and sober. These are the conversations that I would have with the families. Now, you fast forward, and now I'm in a relationship with a woman who's almost as active as I am. You know, she sponsors a ton of women. She goes to meetings. We go to the same meetings. Not once have I ever taken a phone call and her get mad at me, where my ex-wife would get mad at me all the time for taking the phone call. I pretty much can work with sponsees whenever I want. It's a different set of circumstances. So there isn't, like, make sure you get a competent sponsor that can guide you through this. You know, don't try to figure this out on your own. You know, having a sponsor that knows what's going on in your life, this is how a sponsor sponsors. These are conversations. Your question is going to be, you know, the solution you come up with to address it, that's what a sponsor is for.
Well, and just to touch on, like, in the beginning, if you remember from my story, I didn't have a job and I didn't have a relationship. So I had a lot of free time. And so I was attending a lot of meetings in the beginning. But at some point in time, you do have to live life and not be a slave to meetings and things like that. So in the beginning, I agree with what Tarek's saying. You've got to be very focused and very diligent. And because, like, not all meetings are created equal. Some of them, I'll just tell you, like, some people have said, well, there aren't any bad meetings. I disagree. There are a shit ton of bad meetings. I've been to a lot of them, right? But here's what I know also, is that in my experience in recovery and watching others is is a buddy of mine once complained because we had a meeting on a four step and there's the guy over there in the corner that said, I've never worked a goddamn four step and I'm fine. I don't need a fucking sponsor to do all this stuff. And he like, dude's fucking miserable, right? And we leave that meeting and my buddy looks at me and he goes, man, somebody needs to shut him up. I'm like, no. They don't need to shut him up at all. I was like, he's demonstrating what it looks like when you don't work a four step and you don't have a sponsor, right? Versus the people that shared in the meeting about working a four step and having a sponsor, they were demonstrating a different thing. So regardless of where you are in your life, you're going to be an example. You can be a good example or a bad example, right? I choose to try to be one in alignment with God and not one that's in alignment with some other force out there that isn't God, right? So that's all I have. I appreciate you guys, and thanks for listening to us.